This is Alphabet Soup with Sarah,
Matthew,
and Laura.
Hello! This is Alphabet Soup, as our intro said, and we are here today in the studio with Matthew Walsh, our co-host.
It's me!
And I am Laura Trithewey, also host, and we're missing Sarah Higgins, who is our other co-host. She's away this week.
Vacation times.
And if you don't know about Alphabet Soup, we are this show that talks about everything to do with creative writing at UBC, and we interview MFA Master of Fine Art grad students. And today we will be talking to Sierra Sky Gemma. Hi, Sierra.
How's it going?
It's going well. It's great to be here.
Sweet.
And Sierra will be reading a piece for us today. But before we get started, we should probably warn everyone that there might be some swears.
Lots of swears.
There will be some swears.
And we're going to be talking about sexuality today.
Big time.
Big time.
Lots of graphic language.
Graphic language. And technical language.
Yeah.
Like vulva, vagina.
And penis.
Yeah. Those technical words. Some of you may not know what they mean, but you'll find out.
Yeah. So hopefully that gave you a taste of what to expect. And so maybe turn your dial before we head into that.
Yeah.
If you're not up for that. But otherwise, stick around because we have a great reading from Sierra. And Sarah, do you want to tell us a little bit about the piece you're going to be reading for us today?
Sure. It's an excerpt from a longer essay entitled How to Come Out to Your Kids in 5 Easy Steps. And today I'm just going to be talking about step one. So,
great. And so is there anything else we should say before we get started? And we'll just hand it over to Sierra. We're going to take a short commercial break in the middle. But other than that, I think we're
good to go.
Ready to go.
Okay,
so we will turn it over to Sierra. And so you'll be listening to Sierra Sky Gemma on Alphabet Soup on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Here we go.
How to come out to your kids in 5 easy steps. Step one, you can't explain complex emotional aspects of sexuality if you are too embarrassed to explain the basic physical aspects of sexuality. Teach your kids the accurate words for body parts and sexual acts in the beginning, adjust as needed. When my son Liam was a baby, I named the parts as I washed his body. In a sing-song voice, I crooned, clean behind the ears, clean the face, clean the chest, clean the penis, clean the testicles, and so on as I moved the washcloth over his body. It wasn't easy. I didn't grow up in a family where we used proper names for things. My mother called it down there, Watching her, those few awkward times she felt obligated to say accurate medical terms, the word vagina seemed like it was being pulled out of her, a scalpel slicing her throat on its way. I also inherited this awkwardness, but I was determined to do better than my parents. No matter how I was cringing on the inside, I presented an unruffled surface. When Liam was about 5 or 6, he asked where babies came from. I had read in a parenting book that you should give your child as much information as they ask for, but no more, so I gave him the stock answer. A dad puts his seed inside of a mom and the baby grows in her tummy until it is ready to be born. But how? How does the seed get in there? I blinked. For some reason, I thought I had a couple years till this came up. Although panicking on the inside, I turned calmly to Liam and said, "Oh, you know, Grammy has a great book about this. I'll ask her to send it. Sound good?" After Liam left the room, I jumped on the phone to his great-grandmother Judy, a tough, no-nonsense woman who'd raised 6 kids and been a labor and delivery nurse for 30 years. "Judy, Liam is asking how babies are made. Like, really asking." I freaked. I mean, I didn't act all freaked, but I freaked on the inside and I couldn't think of what to say, so I just said, "You have a good book about it, and I'd ask you for it. Can you send me that book? Something about how babies are made?" "Oh yes, will do. I've been using that book for years, and it's great." She laughed at me, as she usually does, and promised to send it. When the book arrived, I called Liam into the living room and asked him if he wanted me to read it to him. He agreed, so I read him How Babies Are Made by Stephen Shep and Andrew Audrey, copyright 1968. The book uses paper cutout images and words to explain reproductive systems and processes in a number of organisms. It begins with how flowers are pollinated and reproduced, then how chicken eggs are fertilized and hatch, then how dogs mate. Spoiler, it's doggy style. And how puppies come to be, and finally how human babies are made. When I finished reading it, I closed the cover and looked at Liam, smiling. He sat there looking wide-eyed and startled. I lost my confidence. "Do you have any questions? Is there anything you learned in the book that you don't understand? Because I can answer any of your questions." Without looking at me, he grabbed the book and walked out of the room silently. "Uh-oh. I think that may have been too much too soon," I said to my husband, Casey. "He'll be fine." And indeed, he was. 2 days later, Liam brought me a piece of paper. On one side, he'd written, "Mommy, I want a baby brother." He'd drawn what I'd imagined was a picture of him and a little brother, although it looked more like one bigger potato holding a smaller potato's hand. Liam reached out and turned the sheet of paper over in my hand. On the other side, he'd painstakingly recreated from the book the pictures from the section on how human babies are made. In panels, he had set out the basic steps as if to say, "Mom, I want a baby brother, and here's how you can make me one, just in case you didn't know." Casey and I never did make him one, but we gave it an honest try. As Liam grew older, the opportunities to use accurate terms diminished, but when they did come up, I always acted casually. One night, when Liam was about 7 years old, the three of us went out to dinner at a restaurant. As we waited for our food to come to the table, Liam asked us if he could ask a question about sex. "Sure," we said. "Do you have to take off your clothes to have sex?" "No, but it is sure easier that way." "All of your clothes?" "I would recommend taking off all your clothes when you're going to have sex," I said. "Especially your socks," Casey said. "Yes, for God's sake, never ever leave your socks on," I said. "Or your watch," Casey said. Thinking about how recently my son had taken on the particular odor of boy, I thought it would be a good time to talk hygiene, something we hadn't done in a while. "Hey, while we're talking about this kind of stuff, I noticed that you haven't been doing the best job washing your hair. When you shower, make sure you really scrub the shampoo into your hair. Use your fingers to gently massage or scratch your scalp. Make sure your head is clean too," I said. "Make sure everything is clean," Casey said. "Take the puff or the washcloth, put plenty of soap on it, and then use it to scrub your skin, especially your armpits and your feet. And your..." I faltered. I had always called them testicles, but he was in grade school now. What names had the other little boys used around Liam? "Balls? What do you call your testicles these days? Do you call them balls or testicles or..." "I don't know," Liam said. "Seeds of the baby?" Seeds of the baby, I asked, and Casey howled. Yeah, isn't that what they are? Sort of, yeah. I mean, semen comes from your testicles, and those are kind of like seeds that grow into babies, so yeah, that makes sense that you would think of them that way. But testicles is the accurate word, although a lot of guys call them balls, I said. Casey brought the topic back around to hygiene. The important thing to remember here, he said, is to wash your balls. Under your balls, behind your balls, the sides of your balls. Thoroughly, okay?
Okay, great, Sierra. We are just going to take a short break and we'll be back with you in a second.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Hello, this is the recording artist Jay Arner, and you're listening to CITR.
And we are back. This is Alphabet Soup on 101.9 FM in Vancouver. And today we are talking to Sierra Sky Gemma, who is a nonfiction writer, also a fiction writer, in the Master of Fine Arts program here at UBC in the Creative Writing Department. And we are listening to a nonfiction piece by her about her son and learning about sexuality. And so we're just going to head into the second half here. Take it away, Sierra.
Casey and I had instilled calm coolness to discussion about sex and the body. And as new issues came up, they were just no big deal. When Liam was almost 11, I read Raising Cain, Protecting the Emotional Life of Boys by Dan Kinlan and Michael Thompson. In one chapter, I read that parents usually talk to their boys about masturbation around age 13, 2 years too late. 2 years too late? That would mean that Liam was on the cusp of masturbation. I hassled Casey repeatedly to talk to Liam about masturbation. Casey was less than thrilled, but I felt it was important for this talk to come from the parent who shared the same type of genitalia with the child. Casey, you can answer questions because you have the same parts. For several months, I pestered Casey until one day I walked into the living room to see the two of them deep in quiet talk in the corner. I realized it was finally happening and made myself scarce. After about 30 minutes, Liam went into his room and Casey joined me in the kitchen. "Well, I can tell you one thing," Casey said. "We weren't too late with the talk." "How do you know?" I asked. "Well, I explained what masturbation was and how it is a natural part of growing up and that everyone does it at some point or another. Then I talked about how to do it, you know, like that it is a private thing you do alone and that when he starts that he should use tissues to clean up and then dispose of those tissues in the toilet and to never use clothes or socks or towels or blankets to clean up and to always wash his hands when he's done." "Okay, so how do you know that he hasn't already started?" "Well, after I was done going through everything, I asked him if he had any questions and he did. He asked, 'Why do people do it?' That was his one question." I laughed. "So what did you say?" "Because it feels good." The words kids use for different parts, body parts, or sex acts change as they grow older, as they are exposed to other kids, other people, and different media. As parents, we adapted. The words changed, but the conversation with this was the same: safe, casual, honest. Soon, Liam was asking all kinds of things. "What is a BJ? Why is it called blowjob if it's actually sucking, not blowing? What is poontang?" We found that movies and TV were rife with teaching moments. Like the time we watched I Love You, Philip Morris, because we liked Jim Carrey and Ewan McGregor and we heard it was good and that it was based on a true story. We didn't know much else about the movie, especially that at about 2 minutes in, there is a sudden and graphic sex scene. Stephen Russell, as played by Jim Carrey, is naked and sweating and pumping away furiously, and before Casey and I could react, the camera pans out to show another man, also naked and sweaty, on all fours in front of Stephen. And by the time we could even find the remote, the other man had taken quite the pounding, and then Stephen finished and it was all over, and Casey and I just looked at each other as if to say, well, that's done. Permanent damage done. And since it seemed like it couldn't get more graphic than that, we figured we might as well finish the movie. We believe it's important for Liam to see gay couples represented on television, and let's be honest, it doesn't happen that regularly. So we kept watching. Stephen meets Philip Morris, who is to become the love of his life, in prison and shows him the ropes. In an extended montage, Stephen shows Philip what everything costs in prison. Want a new book to read? It's going to cost a lot of money, or, as Stephen says, you can suck his dick. Your choice. Want cigarettes? It's going to cost a lot of money, or you can suck his dick. It's your choice. Want drugs? It's going to cost a lot of money, or you can suck his dick. Your choice. By the end of the scene, Liam said, wait, hold on, pause, pause. We paused the movie. Is this a gay prison? And then we had to explain prison life. Or like the time we were watching a television show and some character made a joke using the word dildo. Liam ordered us to pause. Wait, what's a dildo? He asked. Casey said, a dildo is an adult toy that is shaped like an erect penis that a woman sometimes uses to masturbate with. Liam took a moment to let this sink in. Then he started laughing hysterically until he was gasping for air. Between laughing and gasping, he blurted out, knowing what a dildo is makes dildo jokes so much funnier. Or, like the time Liam asked, what does eating pussy mean? And I said, eating pussy is when you kiss and lick a woman's vulva or vagina. Whereupon Liam collapsed to the floor, seemingly in disgust. And Casey said, what? It's a very pleasurable thing to do. But Liam continued to freak out. So Casey said, well, just look at it this way, Liam. Either penis or vagina, one of them's going in your mouth. Truer words have never been spoken, but it didn't help the situation much.
Wonderful.
Yeah, thank you so much.
That was awesome. So if anyone was sitting on the corner of their seats wondering when Volva was coming in.
It was right at the end. She saved it for the crescendo. Crescendo.
Okay, great. Well, do you mind if we ask you a couple questions?
Ask away.
Okay, great. Matthew, you want to shoot first?
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of questions, but I just thought it was really interesting that you chose to talk about sexuality, which is such like a difficult topic to talk to about your kids, especially at an age when they're going through puberty. And I remember like when I was going through puberty, I was mortified because like you're growing a beard, you can't really hide it. And like I remember my mom like
you're growing erections, you
growing
can't really
erections,
hide them.
You can't really hide them. And like, you know, the only thing that I, because my mom was like your mother, like we never talked about our lower halves. We're like sort of like torsos like floating around the house. Nobody had genitalia and no one talked about it. And then like this stuff starts happening to your body and you don't know what's going on. It's really confusing. So I think a book like this is really helpful.
Yeah.
To like to the children, but also to the parents.
It is going to be a book. And this essay is one small part of a book that I'm working on with another writer, Emily White.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be more vulvas, more penis.
And we only got
more
one
kids.
Out of five tips. Like there's more.
I
tips
know.
And steps.
So many steps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we're just going to take a short break and play some commercials, and we will be back with Sierra and more questions about her piece.
North by Northeast is Toronto's festival destination, taking the town over this June 13th to the 22nd. These 10 jam-packed days feature music, film, art, interactive innovations, and comedy. To enjoy all things North by Northeast, be sure to grab your tickets online at nxne.com/tickets. That's nxne.com/tickets.
Hi, I'm John K. Sampson, and you're listening to CITR 101.9.
And we are back. This is Alphabet Soup, a program about creative writing at UBC. And we are talking today with Sierra Sky Gemma, who is a MFA student here in the creative writing program at UBC. And she's talking to us about a piece, a nonfiction piece about sexuality and talking to her son about his sexuality as he goes through the difficult stages of puberty and adolescence. So I just had a question. I mean, this seems to kind of be a bit of a trend right now. There's a lot of memoirs about, moms who are not doing everything right. Like, yeah. We're kind of busting the myth of the perfect mom.
Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah. And there was a recent one that kind of was the huge breakout piece in this, which was like drunk mom, who's it's about this woman called, I'm not exactly sure if I'm saying her name right, Shawita Bidlowski, who is a writer from Toronto. She wrote a memoir about being drunk while mothering. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if those memoirs or any of that kind of ilk of memoir inspired you, or whether you're friend with Jawita?
Sadly, no, but that can change. and I haven't read her book, although it's definitely on my to-read list. Mm-hmm. Not as far as some of these books, which are long past due, in my opinion. They haven't really inspired me personally, because I've been writing about this for a few years now before it became like a really hot new topic in women's nonfiction. But I think that just represents what a lot of writers and a lot of mothers are going through. Like, I think a lot of us are sort of going through the same thing, thinking, oh, are we doing it wrong? Yes, you are doing it wrong. You're doing literally everything wrong. Or so it would seem from the baby forums. So, it's natural that writers who are mothers want to talk about these experiences, which I think are much more common than we let on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Really good at fucking up.
I think everybody is, and it's totally fine.
Yeah, but I'm fucking up another human being. I think that's mm-hmm. that's the distinction.
Yeah, the stakes are higher.
Yeah.
I was like when I was doing some research for your piece, I found out that Alicia Silverstone actually chews up her baby's food and spits it into its mouth like a bird.
I wonder
what that would do to you.
No, she needs to be stopped.
Yeah, and she's kind of part of the whole, like, age of attachment kind of trend of parenting that you're sort of railing against in the work that you're doing right now, right?
Oh, yeah. I co-write a blog with Emily White, and it's called Regressive Parenting. And our tagline is Detachment Parenting in the Attachment Age.
Can you tell us a little bit about the attachment age? Because I wasn't totally up on it before we started this program, and now I want to know more.
Well, it's not super new, but the publicity that it's generated over the last few years has kind of put it in the spotlight. Mm-hmm. So a couple years ago, it was on the cover of Time magazine. There was this woman breastfeeding her four-year-old on the cover of Time magazine, and it said, "Are you mom enough?" And so that was kind of the big blast of attachment parenting into, mainstream media, I think.
Right.
Because it was everywhere at that point.
No, that's great. That's like, great. That was the, I guess I missed that Time magazine cover.
If you're not a parent, it would be easy to miss. Mm-hmm. But if you are a parent, it's like, oh, what's going on? And basically their philosophy is, I think, a really classist philosophy, because it involves, having a doula and spending a lot of time with a baby. And those are really luxuries of the middle to upper class. Mm-hmm. And I think that attachment parenting really forgets that many mothers don't have the luxury of having paid help, mm-hmm. or even the ability to take much time off from work after a baby's born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of horror stories about that.
Yeah.
The other thing I liked about this is that you mentioned, like, getting information from the media, and, like, let's face it, like, getting access to porn is so easy. So, like,
for
are you
going
to sort of work? Yeah, for boys.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, are you going to work that into your book somehow, sort of address this issue?
Absolutely. I'm working on a piece now about raising boys in the age of digital sex.
Right.
Is that sensational enough?
I think it's sensational.
I think it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I'd buy that.
Yeah, totally. And that's going to be an essay.
It's going to be an article, and then hopefully it will also work its way into the book eventually.
Awesome. That sounds amazing.
Thanks.
Okay, great. Well, we are going to have to round up, unfortunately. But thank you so much for everyone to tune in and listen to Sierra.
Thank you.
Will you and, come back again? Like,
I will. I really do love saying penis on the air. So.
And if you want to listen to more of Sierra say penis, you can go to her reading series, Swoon,
which
me the details. She's hosting.
I am the new co-host for Swoon, and we are on Twitter. That's the easiest way for you to get in touch with us right now, at Swoon Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have a literary event in the fall.
Awesome.